Speaking on this program is Bill Boyd.
We've been studying Job on Wednesday night. And one of the things Job says in Job chapter 10 and verse 4 is he's complaining to God about his situation. He says, God, you don't have eyes to see like man sees. And your days are not like the days of man. And Job thought of God as being so far and so high above man that there's no way God could relate to man. But Job didn't know about Jesus. And God did come in the form of the flesh and did see through eyes of flesh the condition of this world. And He can relate to us. And there's so many things in our life. And if we would think, it's sometimes hard to think, well, what would God do? But we can relate with Jesus. And what would Jesus do? Because He had the infirmities of our flesh and was tried in all points like as we are, yet without sin. And so all of the things that we deal with in life, in some way or another, Jesus dealt with things that are like that. And we know He can relate to that. And as we relate to Jesus, I think it helps us understand Him better to think on those things. Now, Jesus had a family. May not have thought of a lot about that, but I want to talk about the family of Jesus this morning. We're going to talk about His Heavenly Father and make sure we understand that. He was the Son of God, but He had an earthly stepfather, and I use that term. I think that's a good way to describe the relationship of Jesus to Joseph. He had an earthly mother, and He had brothers and sisters, but then He had a spiritual family. And we want to talk about the family of Jesus this morning. Now, Jesus was the Son of God. And the way the Bible describes that, I think it's five times the Bible says He is the only begotten Son of God. Now there are some translations that will just say, well, He was the unique Son of God. And that is true. But you know, we can be the children of God, and every one of us are unique. And so that doesn't fully translate that thought that's in that word, monogenes, if it's translated only begotten. He is unique in that the way He became the Son of God was unique. And that is captured in that word. And it's captured in the context in which that word is used. In John chapter 1 and verse 12, He says, as many as received Him, gave He the power to become sons of God. And so we can become sons of God. But not like Jesus was. He was a Son of God in a unique manner. And that He became the Son of God in a unique way. And so, in that context of John 1:14, we beheld His glory as of the only begotten of the Father. And then in verse 18, no man hath seen God at any time, the only begotten Son, which is in the bosom of the Father. He hath declared Him. We see it again in John chapter 3. Except a man be born again, he cannot enter into the kingdom of heaven. Except a man be born of water and of the Spirit, he cannot enter into the kingdom of heaven. That new birth that makes us a child of God. But we don't become the sons of God or the children of God in the way that Jesus was. And the word to describe what was unique about the way Christ became the Son of God is that word monogenes, only begotten. And so later in that chapter and in that context, it says, God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son. And he that believeth is not condemned already, because he hath not believed in the name of the only begotten Son of God. Go into 1 John chapter 4 and verse 7. Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and everyone that loveth is born of God. The American Standard Version says, everyone that loveth is begotten of God. So we can become begotten of God, born of God, but not in the sense that Jesus was. It was different with Him. And 1 John chapter 4 and verse 9, two verses later, in that context, in this was manifest the love of God toward us, because God sent His only begotten Son into the world that we might have life through Him. So Jesus became the Son of God in a unique manner, different than the way we become sons of God. We become sons of God in a spiritual manner, but Jesus, due to a special creative act in the womb of the Virgin Mary that resulted in the birth of Christ, He took on that flesh in a unique way, and the word that describes that is that word monogenes, only begotten. It is fascinating to me that every time that word is used in reference to Christ, it's used in the context of us becoming the children of God, but not in that unique sense that Jesus was. So Jesus had His heavenly Father, but Jesus had an earthly stepfather. And legally, Joseph was His father. And that's the point of the genealogy in Matthew chapter 1. It begins in verse 2 that Abraham begat Isaac, and Isaac begat Jacob, and Jacob begat Judas and his brethren, and it goes on down through there. And then down you get to verse 6, and David the king begat Solomon. And then 14 generations follow that. And then in chapter 1 and verse 12, Jechonias begat Shealtiel about the time of the carrying away into the captivity. And so there's another 14 generations following that. And then it goes to verse 16 that Jacob begat Joseph, the husband of Mary, of whom was born Jesus. Now that word whom is interesting because in the English we don't have feminine and masculine genders to our words like they did in the Greek. But in the Greek language that word whom is a feminine gender. He wasn't begotten of Joseph. He wasn't born of Joseph. Of whom, the feminine, was born Jesus. There's a change in the language. It doesn't say Joseph beget Jesus. But Joseph becoming the husband of Mary and Mary giving birth to Jesus while Joseph is her husband makes Joseph legally his father. And so Joseph is a son of David and an heir to the throne. And it makes Jesus that heir to the throne of David. And we don't read a lot about Joseph, but we know this. In Matthew chapter 1 and verse 19, Joseph is called a just man. And he's being complimented there. Mary's being found with child, and he doesn't know the situation. And he was minded to put her away privately because he was a just man, it says. And so we read about Joseph taking care of Christ, carrying him into Egypt to escape the wrath of the king, coming back and dwelling in Nazareth still to avoid those Herods. He went up into Galilee and Nazareth, taking Jesus to the temple when he was 12. And Joseph, being a carpenter, taught Jesus to be a carpenter. Jesus is called a carpenter in the book of Mark, chapter 6 and verse 3. And he is known as the carpenter's son. And so Joseph was a good stepfather to Jesus. Now Jesus had a mother. And her name was Mary. And we're introduced to her. She is a virgin that is espoused to Joseph. But before they came together, it says in Luke chapter 1, verses 28 through 31, the angel came to Mary and said, "Hail, thou art highly favored. The Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women. Fear not, Mary, for thou hast found favor with God, and behold, thou shalt conceive in thy womb and bring forth a son, and shall call his name Jesus." And Mary's reaction to that in Luke 1 and verse 38 is, "Behold the handmaid of the Lord. Be it with me according to thy word." Now that says a lot for that young lady, because here she was about to enter into that special time of her life where she would have her new husband. She would enter into that relationship having a child that was not her husband's, but that had come from God. And not knowing the consequences of that yet, that submission to the will of God is what she displayed and exhibited. And she was joyful over this in Luke 1 and verse 46. She sang that song and said, "My soul doth magnify the Lord, And so she gave her life, not by dying, but the living part of her life, she gave that unto the Lord that she might become the mother of Jesus. And when they took Jesus to the temple and lost him on their way home, thinking he was with the other one, and both of them misplaced, they went back and found him there. It says a remarkable thing about Jesus, and I think all the young people here need to listen to this and think about Jesus. You know, every now and then, you get to thinking, Jesus was 12. And it's about that time, 12, 13, 14, 15, somewhere along that time, we get to thinking that we know more than our parents. These parents, that they're just not tuned in with us and don't really understand us. And if anyone could have ever said that, Jesus could say that, couldn't he? Jesus knew more than his parents. He did. And even though he knew more, and even though he knew his parents did not really understand him, it says that he was subject unto them. Can you imagine what it'd be to have a son, Jesus? What a good son that would have been to raise up that son. And he was subject unto them into his manhood. And he's about 30 years old when he's at the wedding feast. And it sounds like Mary's used to letting Jesus know what he ought to do and telling Jesus things. And she tells him, they're about out of wine, expecting Jesus to do something about it. And Jesus told her, in John 2 and verse 4, woman, what have I to do with thee? Mine hour is not yet come. And Mary, his mother, had to learn that the time had come when Jesus would not be subject unto her, but that she would be subject unto him. And he performed his first miracle there at that wedding feast. We read about Mary shadowing Jesus through his life, taking the things that happened to him and treasuring them up in her heart. And she was before the cross when Jesus committed the care of Mary to John, and John and Mary together. And then after he rose from the grave in Acts chapter 1 and verse 14, we read that these all continued. These are the disciples of Christ. He named a lot of them. And these continued with one accord in prayer and supplication with the women and Mary, the mother of Jesus. Now that's the last time we read about Mary in the New Testament. And she is certainly a woman of honor, and we are to give honor to whom honor is due. But the Bible never does say to worship Mary. It never does say to use Mary as a mediator between us and God as we would Jesus. That would take from the glory of Jesus. The Bible never does say to take your rosary beads and to count them out and say, Hail Mary, Mother of God! Hail Mary, Mother of God! Hail Mary, Mother of God! The Bible never says that. Those are the inventions of man, and they do not come from the Bible. So we want to honor Mary for who Mary was, but not for something she was never intended to be. We want to honor her son, Christ. Now, Jesus had brothers and sisters, little brothers and little sisters. Some of you that have little brothers and sisters could understand. Jesus knows what that's like to have little brothers and sisters. It says in Matthew 1, 24 through 25, Then Joseph, being raised from sleep, did as the angel of the Lord had bidden him, and took unto him his wife, and knew her not till she brought forth her firstborn son, and called his name Jesus. Now, he's the firstborn son of Mary. But it doesn't say he was the last born or the only born son of Mary. We read in Matthew chapter 13, verses 55 and 56, Is not this the carpenter's son, referring to Jesus? Is not his mother called Mary? And his brethren, James and Joseph and Simon and Judas, and his sisters, are they not with us? Jesus had little brothers and sisters. Just imagine what it'd be to grow up in the house where your older brother is Jesus. Now, you wouldn't know what was special about him, But you probably know, now that is a good big brother. I can't imagine Jesus being anything but kind and loving and tender toward His little brothers and sisters. Can you? Now, the Bible doesn't describe this. But I know, too, if you're like me, you grow up in your home, and even though things in your home may be a little different, they just seem like normal to you, don't they? And that's just the way it is in your home. And you don't think about it much. And I bet they never really thought too deeply about who their older brother was and who Jesus was. They just kind of took it for granted that He was the way He was. In His kindness and compassion for them, as caring for them as a big brother. But it does later say that His brethren didn't believe on Him. In John chapter 7 and verse 5, neither did His brethren believe on Him. They just kind of took Him for granted for who He was, and that's what we do a lot of times in families. But that didn't continue. After Jesus rose from the dead, in Acts chapter 1 and verse 14, when they were gathered together, it says these all continued with one accord in prayer and supplication with the women and Mary, the mother of Jesus, with His brethren. And so they had become convinced and understood that their big brother was the promised Messiah that would come. Now, we don't know a lot about his brothers of Simon and Joseph, but we know a little bit about James. James is called in the Bible, James, the Lord's brother, in Galatians chapter 1 and verse 19. He became very prominent in the church in Jerusalem. He wrote the book of James. I wonder if he took after his daddy. Because tradition calls him James the Just. And as we pointed out, Joseph was known as being a just man. And we know a little bit about his youngest brother, Jude. In Jude 1, it's Jude, the servant of Jesus Christ, and the brother of James, which would be that James of Jerusalem. Now, it's interesting that neither James nor Jude identify themselves as the brothers of Jesus, but both of them identify themselves as servants of Jesus. And it is as though they realize there is a more important relationship that we have with Jesus that is more important than the family, physical, earthly family relationship we have. And that is that spiritual relationship that we have with Him. I might say that in regard to James, though he doesn't identify himself as the brother of Jesus in that book, but about 17 times he calls his fellow Christians his brethren. And I think that's interesting in that little book that he does that so many times. You see, Jesus has a spiritual family. And in our text in Matthew 12, verses 46 through 30, it says, "While he yet talked with the people, behold, his mother and his brethren stood without, desiring to speak with him. Then one said unto him, Behold, thy mother and thy brother stand without, desiring to speak with thee. But he answered and said unto them that told him, Who is my mother? And who are my brethren? And he stretched forth his hand toward his disciples and said, Behold my mother and my brethren, for whosoever shall do the will of my Father which is in heaven, the same is my brother and my sister and my mother." Jesus looked at that spiritual relationship that he had with his disciples. And to him, that took precedence over the physical relationships that he had with his own family. That is tremendous. And there's blessings that come with that. When we become a child of God, Jesus becomes our big brother. In Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 6, Christ is the Son over His own house, whose house we are. If we hold fast the confidence and the rejoicing of the hope firm unto the end. And it tells us that as Jesus is an heir, we are heirs with him of the inheritance. Romans chapter 8 and 14 says, as many as are led by the Spirit of God, they are the sons of God. But then in Romans 8, 17, and if children, then heirs. Heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ. Now that's the blessings that come with that spiritual relationship we have with Him, whereby He is our brother. But it also comes with an expectation. Matthew chapter 10 and verse 37. Jesus said, he that loveth father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And he that loveth son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. Is there any practical implications to that? Oh, well, sure there are. Now, we know family's important. And family ties. And we want to take care of our family. And we need family time together. And we'll go on family vacations to have that time. But when you go on a family vacation, do you take a vacation from the Lord? Where are you on Sunday morning on your family vacation? So, well, now we need family time. That's right. But why shouldn't maybe the worship, when your family gathers together to worship on vacation with your spiritual brethren, not be the high point of that vacation? And don't put that off. What about this? Well, we're not going to make it to worship Sunday because we've got family visiting. And so we'll take some kin folks coming through that they don't go to church. We're not going to leave them at home. They may not even like it if they brought them with them. So we're going to neglect our spiritual family and take care of our physical family. Doesn't this verse speak to you? He that loveth father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and he that loveth son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. What are you teaching your earthly family when you let them know that you will neglect your spiritual family for them? What are you teaching about the importance of that spiritual family? And then what about this? Well, I'm not going to be a member of that church because, you know, my mother was not a member of that church. And I'm going to honor my mother. Or my father was not part of that church. I'll honor my father. Now, maybe your mother should have been a member of the Lord's church. I think she should have if she was not. But you are not honoring your mother to stay out of the Lord's church. If your mother is alive, then you can teach her the importance of making sure this is right while there is time. By making sure that you obey the gospel even if your parents would not. But if your parents are not alive, you are not helping them to stay out of the church. If there be some reason that they would be in heaven, it should surely be because they acted to the best of the knowledge that they had. And I'm not offering a false hope here that the Bible doesn't offer. But surely you would honor them by letting people know that they raised me that way to make sure that I'm going to do the best that I understand. As I know that, and you cannot let the love of your family keep you away from being obedient to the gospel and following that, and then try to claim the Lord as your brother. It will not work that way. And so Jesus taught us about family and about spiritual things and about the importance of family, but about the overriding supreme importance of spiritual family. And we can learn from that lesson. If you're not a member of the church, well, you need to be. You need Christ as your big brother. You need to have that promise that you can be joint heirs with Him. Be part of that family of God which means more to Him than His own fleshly brothers and sisters.